to another episode of Veterans of the Long War, a miniature wargaming podcast. Joe and I are here to talk miniature wargaming, etc. Is this a 42nd time?
42, yeah.
42nd time. So join us again for a podcast from two guys from Western Massachusetts who talk about miniature wargaming. Sometimes there's three of us, sometimes there's four of us.
Right now there's two of us.
And we are super excited. We've got all of the we've been talking for months in anticipation of 8th edition. It is now out. We've got the books in hand. Have had a chance to you've played some games, Joe. I haven't. I've read some books, and that's going to be our main topic for the evening. Yeah. How have you been?
I'm all right. I'm pretty good.
Good to hear.
Over the last month, so it's good to be home. I think my body needed to readjust the clock a little bit, so you know, not a lot of whole lot of time spent doing hobbying and things of that nature. But I've been good. I think I'm finally recovered sleep wise. So good. Good. Accomplished a lot on the work trip. I don't want to talk about that too much, but also got to experience some things that I might never get the opportunity to. Experience again, like I got to visit the Great Wall of China, which was really fantastic, and then the Forbidden City, which is in Beijing. I got to kind of go through a audio guided tour of it. There's these little like radio gimmicks you put around your neck like a lanyard, and it speaks to you in whatever one of 16 languages. Obviously, I had English, and kind of as you walk through, it senses what area of the city you're in. It kind of tells you what dynasty built that part of the city and what it was used for and stuff like that. So just fantastic trip as far as that goes. Got a lot of positive work done as well, so kind of excited to get back to the office, but really excited to get back to hobbying. I got back the Thursday night before 40K came out, and you and I were like passing ships in the night at midnight to pick up those books from off the wall, which was just, I mean, I was exhausted. I was super excited to get the books, but honestly, I don't even think I opened them until a day or so later. I just didn't have the time to dive right in.
I was looking at them that night. We dropped. I didn't see you. I think I maybe saw your car in the parking lot, but nonetheless, I saw, you know, everyone was there. There was a good 25 people there for the release. So
it was a nice crowd.
And it was really well run. Looked like from every angle, like GW sent the correct amount of product, and the store received it on time and had it out, and was moving people through the line real fast. People were grabbing their stuff, so I think we were both a little nervous about that because we've seen.
I've pre-ordered almost every codex that's come out since 5th edition, and not a single one have I gotten on release day.
Well, there's just a lot of steps in that process. Like, it's not always GW's fault. It's not always the local store's fault. It's not always FedEx's fault. But between the three of them, you know, usually there can be a problem. But everything worked out great and was a real success. They did a midnight release locally around here. So I did check out the books a little bit that night and then woke up early the next day and was checking out books again. And the bootlegs are nice and all to have, but I really couldn't get into, I couldn't study. right. I couldn't click around enough and really, really get all the information I needed without making mistakes. So it was really good to finally have books in hand and not have to deal with bootleg gifts and all that stuff. So, I guess we're kind of talking about 8th edition right now. I don't know. Do you want to just kind of keep it a little bit looser tonight, or do you want to actually break into games played, hobby progress, and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, honestly, my only hobby progress, if we're just going to do it, is I painted the Visark. I posted a couple pictures of it. He looks much better in person because I did kind of some fancy stuff with some gloss, putting gloss varnish on the gemstone paints. It really seems to make him really pop against like the fur of his shoulder piece. But anyway, that's about the only thing I've done as far as hobby progress. Everything else has been 40K studying, 40K focused. I did play my last game of 7th. It turned out to be a game of Necrons and Demons versus, I think it was Tau and Space Marines, if I remember correctly. And that was fun. It was a good night. But it was nice to kind of, you know, bid farewell to my dear friend Warhammer 40,000.
You're not thinking about 7th edition anymore, are you, right?
No, not at all. And it was kind of nice because the timing of the trip, I went on vacation and then soon after that went away for work, and it was like the weeks leading up to 40K, as I mentioned, so I didn't have too much like free time to really, get like totally neurotic about it and try to research every possible thing. It was kind of nice, I had a few minutes here, a few minutes there, so I never got to totally obsess over it. So I think for me,
it was a high level of excitement for me. Let's say it that way. I mean, it's funny. I'm getting married in a week.
Congratulations, by the way.
And that's a very exciting thing, but. Getting ready for 8th edition was a very exciting thing.
That's awesome.
Getting your hands on the books.
Yeah.
And just that process was like a kid at Christmas time all over again.
Absolutely.
It's really cool.
It's been so fun to look at my collection that's, 20 plus years old and really look at every unit and be like, well, I can use that unit now. It might not be the best unit or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, there's variation in there, but like,
we'll talk about
it's
that.
Nice to go over my collection again and just be refreshed.
I think we're partially the way there. We're not quite as far there as I would have hoped we would through 8th edition. I think we'll maybe touch upon that a little bit more in the future later on this episode.
Sure.
But, so before we get totally involved in. In 40K talk, I do have a fair amount of hobby progress as usual.
Excellent.
Did a lot, but I think I'll wait until we get more into 8th edition because it's sort of relative to 8th edition. And nothing seriously hobby or painting specific that I've done recently, but I did get a non 40K game last weekend or this just it's Monday now. So over the weekend I played some Marvel DC. That was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Played it off the wall. There's a photo on the Facebook page. Be sure to check it out. If you have yet to visit Veterans of the Long War on Facebook, a good place for us. That's where we post a lot of photos and articles and such. Anyway, had a fun battle playing a Rifts mission, which is sort of like different energy zones activate around the board, and you have to hop around the board and shut them down. DC villains versus DC villains, actually, because that's just sort of what both of us wanted to try out. My opponent had Darkseid, so I got to see just how, the DC, since Marvel lost its license, and we talked about that earlier, and switched over to DC, and Night Models has continued to do the DC miniatures game very, very well supported, very steady release schedule. Hasn't been my personal cup of tea lately. It's been a lot of months of Superman related releases, and I'm not really a Superman guy, but if you are, I know like Arlen's much more of a Superman guy. There's been like all kinds of stuff. Doomsday, Zod and his crew, Supergirl, a different Superman model has come out, Darkseid, which is sort of Superman related, and then finally, there's been a couple of interesting releases coming out soon. They're doing Wonder Woman mounted on a horse and some of the Amazons sort of done in the style of the movie. Probably,
That's pretty cool.
To be in sync with the release of the movie. So the wife is very excited about that. And also Dr. Fate and Martian Manhunter were teased, and they both look like really nice looking models. So good releases coming out from Knight. However, what I was sort of getting into is my opponent brought Darkseid, and that is, since switching from Marvel into the DC side of things, the game is definitely skewed towards big bads, big goods, the big sort of heavy hitter kind of model that anchors your team. So I got to go up against Darkseid, which is the newest incarnation of that sort of style of play. It was okay. It was a very difficult and you sort of I held my own more just by playing to the mission and scoring a bunch of points at the beginning, so that by the end, when I'd sort of been smashed to bits, my opponent had to sort of run around the board and play catch up and barely won by just like 1 point. So it was still a fun game, even though playing against like sort of a more power build in the game. Had a good time, did a really nice terrain setup. Check out the picture off the wall. Continues to have really nice boards and tables and terrain. So
yeah, it certainly looked really nice.
Had a good game over at Off the Wall Games. And also that's the place where we picked up our 8th edition release. It was really well handled, well run. So shout out to those guys. We love.
That's a great store. I mean, since the that newest group purchased the store from previous owners, and nothing against the previous owners, just these guys have really just been able to put the effort in, put the energy in, and the store's really doing well.
Very good, very good. So that's been my sort of non-40K thing. Everything else has been super, you know, really studying the pirated releases, and Joe hooked us all up with that, and that was nice to do, and sort of coming up with lists and sort of figuring all that out and how to deal with points and everything. That was sort of how I first got into 8th, was just sort of clicking around the rules. Between my eyesight and just, you know, having a laptop and this and that, it wasn't something I really wanted to sit down and really
it was hard to
I was sort of just thinking of things I wanted to look them up, got the rules, got the points, and then sort of started playing around with some list ideas and things.
Yeah, that's more or less what I did. I focused on kind of the data slates, and then where I needed to, I went back and read a rule and went back to figure out, oh well, how does this piece work? But yeah, I couldn't read it, like, even though it's only what, 15 pages or whatever, I couldn't read it from front to back. I just really couldn't.
Then when I finally got the book in hand, I really cracked it open and read the rules, you know. I'm super pleased with the book. I really, really like it. I think it's really cool. I love that it's a return to the old classic design style, the sort of icon and the old school 40K logo.
I definitely like that.
Just the borders and everything. I like that it looks like a very classic, iconic 40K book. I haven't even really overly delved into the fluff, but the fluff looks nice and kind of a little bit fresh. It's definitely not like recycled pictures and recycled paragraphs and things like that.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed is a lot of the artwork. There's a great mix of artwork, of new stuff that's very, you know, along that strong aesthetic theme that you're talking about. It's like they're really trying to drive a new brand home with Warhammer, just a little bit more, I want to say edgy, but not in that like sexual tone edgy, but just sort of like more rigid edges, like in a very literal way, you know, like things are just a touch more gothic. And maybe that's because like the Primaris Marines are a little bigger, so all their detail by definition is a little more big, but it's just, I like the new look. It looks nice and, you know, gothic and grim dark, but it doesn't like really overdo it where it's like, oh geez, you know, it's just a billion skulls everywhere, but there are a billion skulls everywhere, but it just, I don't know, it doesn't feel overdone.
Yeah, it's not heavy, you know, it's not over the top. Well, I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's not over the top. Yeah, I know what you mean. So, I mean, I don't think you have to like come to this podcast to get a real in-depth, like introspective overview of the rules. The rules have been really kind of super streamlined and most ways I think that's a really good thing. In a few ways that ends up feeling or seeming a little bit wonky, which is sort of the trade-off you have to have when you go through a super duper streamlining of super duper complex rules. So that was one sort of pro/con. thing that I experienced in it. But overall, I could not have been less interested in 7th edition 40K where it was in the state that it was. So
yeah, even in our group, it had pretty much crawled to a stop. I mean, even the most adamant players, Luke, Dylan, myself, we were playing less than we were before. We were still playing, but it wasn't with the same fervor yet. Once that the real hints of 8th started coming around, it sort of was just like, well, let's just wait and see. I think, kind of the point, and I'll give the floor back to you, but I think the point that you're driving towards is 8th has really kind of brought back a lot of people that had maybe had that sour taste
compared
in their mouth.
What I was really trying to say is compared to how where I was in 7th, I wasn't angry at the game or like a dropout of the game. I was just like, okay, and eventually an addition to change is coming, and then I'll be really, really psyched to check that out. And then that happened, so here I am back. But 7th edition just wasn't really my thing at its current state, and there was enough other games interesting to me, so that's the direction I was. But now, boom, 8th edition, I'm fully back. I'm super, super excited. I haven't even played a game yet. I have built a bunch of lists, and I've thrown models on the table and sort of theory hammered out and rolled some dice and done some theoretical this versus that. And I've watched some games.
A couple questions for you.
Sure.
When you're building lists, are you building them pure match play point values, or are you doing PowerPoints as well?
Yeah, I have not felt comfortable with power levels. Mm-hmm. I know the TFG guys are really pushing hard and saying that power levels will be the way of the future and everything.
It seems to be one of the movements out there right now, yeah.
I don't I broke down my points. I had made a few notes and reflections on 8th edition probably about a week's, maybe 5 days or so into its release, and some general initial impressions. And that this was number 6, power level. So I guess we'll talk about it now.
Sure.
I don't have faith in the community to respect power level, I think power level will very quickly in most communities just become like, okay, all my dudes have all the upgrades, but it's not modeled or anything, and just assume all my dudes have all the upgrades because that's how power level works. And
right.
And I just don't want to see it go in that direction at all, and I think it will go all the way to the extreme level pretty darn quickly. And that's what you, because that's kind of what happened. We didn't have any ad mech players here, but that with that that ad mech build in 7th ed where you could have all the free upgrades, I mean that's sort of the way that went immediately. Yeah, was like, absolutely. Okay, all my dudes have all the upgrades because all the upgrades are free, so that's sort of how it works with power level. So I just don't want to see it go that way at all.
I do see it as a decent like teaching tool. Like, if you wanted to run a few small games for someone to really teach them how a tabletop game is played, and you don't want to deal with building lists, I think that might be a good tool. But outside of that, I think I tend to agree with you. I mean, even just the way people have been talking on the forums and on Facebook, and, the internet community is abuzz, and basically people are like, we've been playing just pure PowerPoint so we can basically power game the whole way through, and I'm sure that's great for some crowds, but I like the confines of a point system. I guess I'm just old school in that way. I've always had a point system. I always want a point system. How else do I know what it's worth? And it seems like
It's just because like, say you play Necrons where there aren't a lot of upgrades, and then versus an army that where there are tons of upgrades, and both armies are just like max. The Necron dude can't really maximize his
The Gauss flare is a Gauss flare.
He can't say I'll take all the upgrades because there's like almost no option, so he can't exploit that mechanic the way pick an army that has lots of options.
Right, probably Tau, I would guess, something along those lines.
And there's a bunch of them. Admech, Tau, and I mean, technically Inquisition has tons of options. I don't know if there's really any way you could put them all together in some kind of powerful combination. But there's all kinds of armies that have long laundry lists of upgrade options, and you could just be like, "All my dudes have all of them," you know, or to whatever extent is legal for kitting out the unit. But I don't think that's a direction that it doesn't seem like any of us want to go in that.
No,
direction.
I feel like we're pretty happy with the point system.
It's not. It's really not that hard. I'm doing all my army building on pencil and paper still, and I'm really not having a hard time. Like I just basically, the units I know.
I feel like
you know the units I use, I already know, and like I know how to alter them, like the few different ways I use.
Right, right. To your model, so, to your collection. I think there's a little bit of confusion out in the world about the point system. You know, typically your special character point values come with all the war gear, but everything else you have to purchase the war gear. So I think that got a little bit of confusion
your
online.
Named,
you know,
named characters, I believe.
Yeah, right? Your named characters. Your they used to call them special characters, point, but yeah, they usually they're all inclusive. Right, where I'll use a Dark Reaper just because that's in my head for the moment, but I believe there are 5 points for just the Dark Reaper, and people were going nuts. Mm-hmm. So, wow, they're so cheap. Well, yeah, but give them the 31-point Reaper launcher, and then all of a sudden they're not so cheap, you know? And so...
Yeah, like Dreadnoughts are 70 points, but then once you put the guns on them, it's like, you know, I think... Two autocannons was like 66 points on top of 70, so then it's like, oh, okay, now that's... pointed like a dreadnought should be. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And everything got a touch more expensive, so I think that kind of freaked people at first, but once you get used to the idea that, you know, GW obviously is keeping war gear separate points to units so they can hopefully more granularly adjust the game in the future for balance or point value changes or whatever. But regardless, once you get used to purchase your dude, purchase the war gear, it's a very simple point system. It's just like you've always had before, but I find, you know, sometimes even myself, I'll go through and I'll forget a piece of war gear, a certain grenade or something that I never use, and I'm like, oh, what's the point cost? Now, luckily, in most of those cases, there's zero point cost, right?
But sometimes you get hung out to dry.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just one of those things. I've been Battlescribe just updated within the last few days, and so I've been using that and then point checking myself with pen and paper just because I don't necessarily trust Battlescribe when it first comes out, you know.
No, I don't trust. Yeah, I don't.
So I think I do kind of what you're talking about is I'll write up little like packages, you know, like 5 warp spiders with an X-Arc with these upgrades, and so I know it's 122 points for him with WYSIWYG the way my models are, and so I can, you know, so I know I can just kind of memorize those chunks of points for different size units, and then when I'm building
then
lists,
you plug them around.
Exactly. Yep, now I'm kind of in that position where I can build a list off of sort of probably 80% there off the top of my head, and then I go and look up the rest, which is it's fun. That's one of my favorite parts of learning a new edition is kind of learning the new points and learning what fits in an old army list. Like I think an 1850 army list for most armies now are like a 2200 point army, so like not every army is that true, but for most, so the tournament level seems to be adapting to around 2000 points. And that's still less points than theoretically we were fielding before. With a more streamlined system, this game's a lot of fun to play. I played my first game the other day, and there were really no hiccups, no confusion. Everything was very clear. It was very fun. You know, it's just positive. You know, everything that comes out is...
Yeah, it's kind of intuitive. I've done a few Math Hammer experiences just on the tabletop, and like... You just kind of know, you know, it's very, very easier since it's system.
Yeah, the it creates an environment where things that typically weren't useful are useful or have the potential to do something big in a game. And it's not because they've suddenly made anything overpowered or underpowered. It's just the structure and the way the game is built. You're able to fire all of your weapons now. You're able to split fire your weapons. You're able to do more dynamic things. The example I'm building towards is I have this Autark conversion that's got a Harlequin jet bike, basically, from the old Rogue Trader days. And he has never really done anything. His job since being born, since I created this conversion, is basically to hide somewhere on the battlefield and try not to die. And that's basically all he's done for years and years and years and years. And in my first game of 8th edition, he came in and just rocked the house. He shot up 3 Marines with his Shuriken Catapult. He shot down a Storm Raven, did the last wound on that with his Laser Lance, and then charged in and killed a couple more Marines. I mean, he'll probably never do that well ever again, but forever, that's like that iconic moment. And what they're talking about when the game developers say on their Twitch channel, they're building a game designed around creating moments. And that, for me, was a moment in that game. And that has fueled me to build my next list and to build my next... You know, to basically get passionate again about 40K is because this one simple Autark that I, you know, just sort of have a connection with because he's a conversion. I've been playing him for years, and he's just kind of my little dude. And he finally went out there and killed something. He finally did something. He died to Bobby G's sword the next turn, but he at least went out there and kicked some butt and tied down a Devastator unit so I couldn't get shot up for another turn. You know, He died without just going out there and just going squish, you know? And it's those moments, I feel like 8th edition creates a lot of situations where those kind of moments are available just from watching Battle Reports online and from watching a little bit of that game with Luke and Adam. I just feel like there's a lot of opportunities for unique stories like that.
I agree. I think that definitely the new system seems to have, and this is sort of what I was, one of the things I was really hoping for, I guess I'll get into it. My main takeaway of 8th edition so far, and it's not that big of a takeaway, but one of the things I was really hoping for, I think I said it a bunch of times in our pre-talks of 8th edition, was I was looking for 8th edition to be able to, you know, pull all kinds, you know, I want to see models that you never see on the table. And you just talked about your sort of model that never really got to do anything, being able to really shine in 8th edition. And I agree that the system really pulls that out more so ever than in 7th edition. And it's really refreshing to see like new, you know, models that used to suck on the table that people are wanting to field and are fielding and are trying out and they're doing well. But I do also kind of feel like that's limited by the fact that it still has like that competitive thing, and it still has that ability to really like find the combos and make for the, you know, the funner, interesting units that you would want to just flop on the tabletop. You sort of make that unviable still. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was hoping for a more of a sandbox, crazy, like, bring whatever you want kind of world. And we got that to a point. Probably the closest thing that I, you know, like, I got as much as I would have wanted, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, sure. I think I get what you mean.
Like, certainly the system had to appeal to the competitive side of things.
Sure.
And we still have that, and it still limits the Wild West sandbox that 8th edition could be, but it's still a heck of a lot better than 7th. That's my ultimate point. Like, we're still, sure, you know, we've got the neato, wow, the things that were never good are now good, and things that were mediocre are now good, and but there's still that upper echelon of things that are kind of dominating the scene. They seem to be dominating the internet scene. They are dominating the local scene. So we're, all of the potential fun of 8th is tempered by the fact that it still can be ramped up to X degree and sort of be like, sure. Oh, okay.
But at least the groundwork this time is laid for them to adapt.
No. It's a positive. So, it was a long-winded and maybe sounded negative, but it's a really a positive thing that I meant out of it. Like, I'm super psyched. And
we'll be right back.
So what I did after this is an older list. Read through the rules. Read through the mostly Xenos 2 and Imperial 2. Those are the two I'm most interested in. I'm looking at Gene Stealer Cult, which was a little bit lackluster. So that led me, surprisingly, again, like a thing that 8th edition does that no other previous edition has ever done. My army was feeling lackluster, so I looked towards NIDS to get a little power. A little power bump,
right?
Because they were looking pretty good. So the thing that, you know, my Gene Stealer Cult would have never done in 7th edition, which is ally up with some NIDS. Now under 8th, there's a few different ways I can ally with NIDS, and I'm looking at NIDS, and they're pretty cool looking, and they look like they do a little bit on the tabletop, and I already have a small old NID collection from 4th edition, and now getting into hobby progress, I am starting to supplement my NIDs with some current hobby purchases and very quick and finished model projects.
Nice.
Basically, I bought a bunch of stuff real fast and built it and painted it real fast. I got some Hormigaunts. I got some more Gene Stealers. I got a box of Venomthropes. I got a Trigon. I think that's it. I think that's it. But nonetheless, I bought all those in the last couple weeks and built and painted them all. I'm really loving painting NIDs because it's just like, It's like the ease of painting Necrons, but the freedom of like being a little sloppy and being able to choose all different kinds of crazy color schemes. Like they all look good. As long as you get nice complementary colors, you can do NIDs, whatever color you want. So, you know, people that think like, oh, if you're looking for an easy army to paint, you got to go Necrons. Like, don't forget about NIDs. They definitely,
they can paint up quick.
They go together quick and they paint up quick. So I've been flying together some cool, like, light purple and gray paint schemes with just a lot of dry brushing and, you know, just simple techniques. Paint them black and then dry brush them purple, or basically base coat them purple with a little bit of black bleeding through, and then dry brush them gray and pick out some different details and just have fun with them and wash them and make them look, you know, kind of dirty and creepy. And they've been coming out really good. I did the Hormigaunts, the Venomthropes. I did – whoa. I think they're doing fireworks around here.
So. Like Arlen now.
Same thing with the Gene Stealers. Yeah, I think that's everything I've done. The Trigon, so like what I'm trying to get away from in my sort of hobby world is that I just tend to get something and then just paint it as fast as I possibly can. So I'm trying to move away from that and just pick like a couple of projects that I can have just basically just base coated and then play with them and then slowly paint them, like paint them not with any kind of feeling like, oh my God, I got to get this painted.
Right.
So
right.
That's what I did with the, I bought the Trigon model and I basically just built the body, like the torso and tail, and I base coated it purple. So I can still put it on the stand and like, it's still,
like a functional represents model.
I can run it, and then at home on my spare time, like my spare time for the next month is non-existent. I'm getting married, and then I'm going on honeymoon, so like painting's not happening. But in August, when I'm just chilling, then I'll have like a nice hobby project that I can focus on. I just dropped a bunch of money on these Tyranids plus all the 8th edition book, so I really need to not spend gaming funds. Like, that's like my priority. Like, gotta start focusing on, you know, house and other things like that. So I did a little 8th edition splurge, got kind of ready so that I can try NIDS and Gene Stealer Cult and Guard they all combo together in various degrees, and I've got tons of different models. Well, you know, I mean, I originally was playing around with the triple build, like Guard and Nids and Gene Stealer Cult all together, but it's hard to do because that list suffers from the, you know, a little bit of everything syndrome.
Right, so jack of all trades.
Yeah, so it just, I couldn't figure out how to do it right, so now I'm looking at more like just Nids and Gene Stealer Cult, where I can focus a little more on what I want out of those two things. And quite honestly, the Nids are a little heavier on the points. I'm running some interesting things with the Nids. So
yeah, I think if I was to do Gene Stealer Cult, it would be with Nids. I think the IG angle is cool, and I can see why people would do it, but it was never never been my thing. I think just bugs, and then bigger bugs, and then more bugs. I think that would be the way.
I still might try to triple it in, but you know, I don't know. I got a couple builds, and it's all packed in my bag. So my plan is to try a few different builds and keep, you know, just kind of what I have in my bag. I got like 1250, 1500, and 2000 builds that I can do all out of that one pack away. You know, I don't have to, like, one of the things I really don't like about 40K is the amount of like packing and unpacking and like that whole thing kind of irritates me. So it's all sort of packed away, and hopefully I can travel with my one little bag and box and work out of that for numbers of games, and that's the plan. So to try to not make this conversation super rambling, I made my general point about 8th edition super happy, feel like it's, can, you know, a little clouded, a little not exactly my cup of tea, but still super, super excited about it, and really what I'm looking for, really invigorating. So overall, super 100% positive. Maybe not 100%, maybe, you know, 98% positive. But I wrote down, I don't know, a list of about 7 or 8 things that hit me in the first read through, the first deluge of rumors from the internet, the first games I saw played at the sector. And that's about it. Or maybe, no, actually, this, I think I wrote this before I went to the sector, so I hadn't even seen you guys abusing the game within like 3 days of its release, all the craziness that I saw there. But anyway, point number one that I wrote down was the go first issue as far as drops. What the 8th edition is all about, drops, like how do you place your army, you know, I go, you go in deployment, and the fact that whoever places their entire army first gets to go first, correct?
Yeah, they get to choose whether they go first or second.
They get to choose if they go first. They're going to tend to choose to go first, but perhaps not. So. And that just, first of all, it just struck me a little bit odd, and from a wargaming perspective, that there are, you know, that a war game exists where there are just certain armies that pretty much, not pretty much, there are certain armies that always go last, and there are certain armies that always go first, and that's just a little bit unique from like a war game that uses dice and randomization and stuff like that. So let's let the conversation start there. What do you feel about this whole go first issue, the deployment, the way deployment works in general? What do you got to say?
Well, I think, let's see, at first I liked it, and then I started thinking about building lists that took advantage of it, and then I realized that there's no way that I'm going to make the best list that takes advantage of it because somebody's a lot smarter than me. But it proves the point that it can be gamed.
What's the list beyond four drops? How can you get less than that?
Well, less than that, I'm not sure. But you could definitely, like, with the capacity of Wave Serpents and Land Raiders, you can put multiple units in a transport now. So you could put 4 or 5 drops in one transport. You know, you could definitely modify your deployment if you had a very dedicated transport-style list to maybe have less drops.
But that's sort of weird because then you're in the problem of, like, as a guard player, there's lots of characters that you Like, you don't want your commissar starting off the game in a transport. You want him starting off the game next to that fifth
sure,
man.
Sure, sure.
You know, like,
I'm not
so
saying
then
it's,
you're in
the best idea for everyone to do it. My point is just the fact that you can game it.
You can do it, but do it at the expense of you have to plan around it, or it's going to be in some ways detrimental. So
right.
Yeah, no,
exactly. But from that competitive standpoint, I mean, you're looking at people who are trying to make these competitive lists. They're looking to gain any advantage they can, and if they can guarantee themselves first turn every game, that's a big advantage, you know. So
right, so the first turn Alpha Strike list becomes like the dominant, right? That's the problem, right? Does this mechanic turn the game into like, okay, the guy that comes up with the crazy, you know, four knights, four drops, guaranteed to go first, got crazy long range power, you're just gonna pick off the things that you're most scared of turn one, you're guaranteed to go first, blah blah blah. Well, what do you think about it? Well, first of all, you got command points, so you got seize the initiative with a reroll, so every single player that goes up against that has a 1 in 3 chance of seizing.
Right.
So there's that.
Yeah, and then you build into the fact that there's so many ways of alpha striking now in the game that usually each individual method of alpha strike is not enough to turn the tide like it was in 7th edition. In 7th edition, it was pretty common that you could get blown off the table in the first turn if you face the right build. And I'm not saying it's not possible in 8th. I just feel like it's less typical.
Right. Well, vehicles are a lot hardier, so there's no more like you're just like sneezing at rhinos and they're going away. That doesn't happen anymore.
Right, exactly. So I feel like, you know, even though the alpha strike capability is higher and you can build it into your lists and all that stuff, I'd like to think that the game somehow accounts for that somewhere. And I guess I just don't have the experience in 8th edition to really say whether it does or not. You know, I'm hopeful that it does. I'm hopeful that we're in a position where they've thought and vetted these things through. But I do, you know, kind of on the note of the drops and going first, do want to mention, and I'm not sure if this is in your notes, that the ITC have released their comp. And what they've done is change it to a +1 to the go first roll. So they definitely see some kind of core issue with it on that large competitive scale. They definitely have, you know, they were part of the playtesting group. We know this for a fact. So, you know, the fact that they've now played through competitive 40K for probably 6 months to a year by now, and they're like, okay, well, here's one thing that we think needs to change for our competitive scene. I think that speaks kind of loudly, and that's probably one of those things that would get house ruled through a majority of places you're going to play.
Was that done by a vote, or was that done by those guys?
Right now, it's their draft, so I think it's all going to get voted on at the next.
So they did it based on like whatever research.
Yeah.
Or
so
thoughts.
Right now, if you run,
because that
would have
been
event,
odd if they had just done it. If they had been. Sorry to interrupt. If they had done it just like the community played the game for 3 days and everyone agreed that, you know, that would be a little bit
wonky,
I think.
Ruling. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it would
be like, what? Really, I didn't hear that.
The Tau ruling when they took away the focus fire or whatever it was.
Oh, did they do some knee jerk? I don't remember.
Yeah,
that
was way back. But yeah, it would be super knee jerk for them to do that. So I'd have to think. First of all, to address your question, it's the draft FAQ. So at this point, it's if you're running an ITC event, you feel free to use these rules, you know what I mean? But I think it's going to get voted on in their next vote. But it's interesting to me that, again, one of the most competitive groups of playtesters, that's one of the few rules changes that they've decided
that they
to make.
Changed. So, yeah, it does seem – it just seems – I don't know. It just seems – from a gameplay perspective, it's just weird that there's no, like, roll-off for
– Right.
Or it's some just, kind of a mechanic or some. It's just like this happens because you did. Or, I don't know. It's a different way to look at the game. Yes. And be accepting and, you know, willing to try different things. And I will play it as written, you know, but it struck me as odd at first go round.
Yeah, I know. And playing one game and having the rule used against me, I'll say, where I didn't get to go first because of it.
Yeah, you got out. But that's basically what happened. You got.
I got.
He min dropped with Bobby G, and Alpha struck you with heavy duty shooting from range. So yeah, that's like worst case scenario. That's what this mechanic is gonna be exploited for.
And it, you know, it wasn't the best, but
it was brutal. It was brutal. I don't know if you want to talk about the game. That game was out of control. Oh my God, it was so, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was. Bobby G's for real. He's basically an auto include, in my opinion, for any Ultramarines army. But basically, he allows most characters, at least the ones that I've seen in IG, may be different. But most characters that give out some type of reroll buff is like a 6-inch bubble, and you get to reroll ones to hit or something along those lines. Or at least that's what the Autarch is. I know there's some Space Marine ones that are like that. Well, with Bobby G, it's you get to reroll all hits and all wounds. Mm-hmm. And suddenly those Rifleman Dreadnoughts become absolute brutality, you know?
And that's exactly my point. Like, the big thing, you know, that was sort of what we heard in the rumor mill coming down the pike from 8th is like, oh, you know, gonna address rerolls and blah blah blah, but then there's like the, you know, the sort of switchblade laying on the floor, like, oh, we got rid of rerolls except for this, you know, 360 point model that's an absolute monster that makes your whole army reroll everything, you know. So that's sort of my point of like,
yeah, I don't disagree.
What I was saying earlier is like, really cool that I can bring X, Y, and Z until, you know, oh, not with this matchup. So
yeah, I think a lot of the
bit of evidence,
you know, playing around Bobby G, I think a lot of it too, you know, how much of it is just addition rust. I don't know the game well enough to play around someone like that or something like that, but I think it ties directly in, and I know this conversation's kind of wandering all over. Crazy, so we'll get back to your list, but a lot of the, and we saw this in previous editions, and I think people often forget this with a new edition drop, is you need to adjust your terrain to the new edition.
Mm-hmm,
and,
totally.
And you've done that with your ruins, as you posted today on
the
Facebook.
Yeah, refer to the – if you check out the Facebook page, I line of sight.
Yeah, line of sight blocking is going to be key in 8th edition 40K now, for a number of different
two
reasons.
Ruins. Basically, I took two ruins that had lots of like little gaps and holes and windows, and I cut cardboard to fit it over. I painted it black on the window side, and from the inside I just painted it a gray to match the inside. So from the inside it just looks like blank walls. From the outside it looks like black, you know, like dark windows and dark holes in the wall. I did that for a piece of GW terrain with some felt. I used felt and plastic bits like rhino doors and stuff to block up some holes, and then I did it with some of the Frontline Gaming ITC terrain, just with cardboard and paint. So I highly recommend that. You gotta do that.
I think line of sight blocking is going to be, you know, crucial in 8th edition. There's a lot of things that hit really easily, and cover is not as big of a modifier as it was before. I mean, I don't think
totally
it's any
different.
Big spoiler for me to just say it's a +1 to your armor save if you are in cover. And the rules for cover is very basic, but in their basic quality, they're very specific. So it's actually, unless you're running a heavy infantry army, it's not very easy to just get a cover save here or there. So having that line of sight blocking and having that ability to just get out of the shooting, you know, the lines of shooting are going to be key, especially for assault armies, because most of your assaults now, I believe assaults don't require line of sight. So you're not hindering close combat armies, and close combat is a big tool in 8th edition. So, I think definitely having a few line of sight blocking pieces kind of cutting off the major angles in the middle of your table is going to be
two
key,
minimum,
but
once really
it's
more.
There, because just the difference in, so there were two games going on last Tuesday when Bob stopped by. I was playing my first game that we mentioned with Dylan, and I made sure to populate the terrain with a bunch of tall ruins, large, we didn't have tons of line of sight blocking, but at least line of sight inhibiting, you know, as much terrain it basically as I felt was appropriate. And then on the other table, it looked to me like Planet Bowling Ball. There was just a couple hills and a couple trees, and luckily it was just demons and orcs running to the middle of the table playing Braveheart.
Yeah.
But it just, it was a big difference when they played another game afterwards and Bobby G brought his Rifleman Dreadnoughts and shot up those demon princes before they even, you know, got out of their deployment zone, because because there was no cover, there was no line of sight blocking. So we need to remember this. There was a big hubbub about it a few editions ago when the Tau got redone and everyone was like, how do you combat Tau? Well, go back to the rule book and look at your terrain building guidelines and look at how many pieces of terrain you actually should have on the table. And I think once you do that and kind of readjust your terrain to the new edition, we're going to be able to play around things like that, which is maybe how Bobby G got through the loophole. But I was saying the same thing at that table. You know, you spend months and months putting out the promo material saying, you know, we're getting rid of reroll this, getting rid of reroll that, we're getting rid of auto include units, you know, things like that. And then boom, I mean, he's the highest quality purchase, but we're rookies.
So but you know what? That's always been, that's always GW knows who supports them wholeheartedly, no matter what. Right, it's the competitive gamers that are there, no matter what's going on with the scene. They're continuing to support the product, so they're gonna give them, even they're not gonna come out and say it, but they're still gonna give them their game. You know, you got to give them something to game. So
sure.
It's still there. It's still, if you want a power game 8th edition, you totally can. It's toned down a bit though.
Yeah, it's different. It's different kind. It's admittedly, now that I've gone off on my little mini rant, they did get rid of like a lot of re-rollable armor saves. The whole armor save wound allocation system is so much cleaner, so much easier, so much better, in so many different ways. So I won't get into the details, but it did eliminate a lot of that. Oh, 2+ re-rollable invulnerable save. Like, I'm never going to cause a wound. Now you're going to cause wounds. They might have 24 wounds on the model, but you're going to cause a few wounds. You're going to feel like you're getting somewhere where before you were playing slots. You were just hoping to get lucky and crack through the armor.
That's ridiculous. Super frustrating. So this all stemmed from the Go First issue. That was number one on my list. Number all two on my list is, it's been talked to death. It's the whole reroll gate thing, the fact that you reroll before you do the roll modifier. So for example, if you're going to go up against Venomthropes and you hit, normally would hit on threes, but Venomthropes make you subtract one to your roll, so you would roll a three, technically you hit, so that is a quote-unquote hit. It does not get re-rolled. If your unit has some kind of reroll hits, it would not get rolled. Then when you finally add the modifier, it goes -1 down to 2, so that 3 would become a miss. Some people are really freaking out about this. I don't think it's – I mean, I think it is a huge deal. It does change things statistically significantly. It does tone down the power of the reroll mechanic, and I don't have a problem with that.
Right, again, and that was one of those things, after flipping my shit over Bobby G at first, I started playing, and even though Dylan had all those re-rolls, there was a lot of occasions where he needed 4 and ups to hit, and he would roll a handful of threes and not get any re-rolls and not be able to take advantage of the layers of special rules. So it was nice to see the math work out that way, and so it helped feel like, okay, well, it's not just auto-hitting with everything. You know, if you can get in those new modifiers that didn't exist in 6th and 7th edition, where we're modifying your actual to-hit roll, you know, then if I can get that in my list, then I have a way to combat heavy reroll-laced armies. So I like the way it works. It's so drastically different than every previous edition that I think it caught a lot of people off guard. It's not intuitive at all exactly, but I do like what it mathematically does to the game, so... Mm. You know, I'm happy for it.
It chills out the reroll a little bit. It doesn't make the reroll like not worth it. A reroll is still very strong. You still want it, but you're gonna, you know, get a few less hits because of it. And so that's kind of been talked to death.
Sure.
And we can move on. The third one that I wrote down initially, I think it's become a much bigger deal to me the more I think about it, is the whole terrain cover thing. It's just terrain is very different now. Cover is very different. Terrain pieces are defined a little bit differently, and the way you get cover is very, very different. You actually have to be, you know, it depends if you're infantry or not. And if you are if you are infantry or not, you need to be fully like enclosed. You need to be on the terrain piece. So it brings back the whole concept of bases for ruins. Does a ruin need a base? If a ruin doesn't have a base, what is its footprint? Blah blah blah. Brings back the whole need for like area terrain. If you're gonna do woods or forest,
Right,
you need
right.
like a little area that represents that. I pulled out a few. I have like a little few little oblong circles of felt that you can set trees up on to be nice little forest areas. So the that kind of terrain is now sort of recognized again. Ruins on bases becomes a question again. And just how infrequently you get covered these days, and how it can create some little like I did pick up a Bobby G kit, a Gilliman kit with the Grey Knight
Nice.
dude and the Cypher. That's another long-term project to maybe paint that up, and I'm in no rush to do it. But I have been messing around with that mechanic. It's really crazy. But one setup I did, I had like a Rifleman Dread that like one arm could see like half of a gene stealer, and the unit of like 15 was hiding behind a building. And he did like seven wounds to the unit, and failed like five saves.
Right.
So it was just like a weird, a sliver of the Dread could see a sliver of one gene stealer and six dudes die. It was like a little bit on it didn't you know it didn't feel right from a game perspective. It
Right.
felt like
It's
it should
much
have
different
happened.
than
Some intervening thing should have
previous.
happened. I should have gotten more of a cover save, or not been able to kill that deep into my unit or something. I understand, again, the streamlining is going to create wonky moments like that, but that was one that happened very early on in just messing around and setting up units and rolling dice. And I think it's going to be something that's going to happen frequently. You're going to have like, especially big units like gene stealers, or you're going to get like almost all of your 10 guardsmen or your 10 whatever behind a builder, but just a little bit of an angle kicked out 1 inch this way, and now I can see that dude's elbow,
Right.
so now six dudes are gonna die. And it's just like I don't know how you find a happy medium in that mechanic, but I think it's gonna be it is an adjustment, and
Yeah, it's
I
just
don't
one
know
of
how
those
much I
things.
like
Yeah,
that.
it's I haven't seen it play out enough to. I get what you're saying. There were from a few like weird cover instances that Dylan and I kind of stumbled upon too. Luke has those. Those hills, it's almost like the hilltop in Lord of the Rings, and he had his dreadnought sort of half up on the stairs of this hill thing, where it really could like it was maybe a quarter of an inch taller than the hill segment itself, but because it's not just like intervening terrain anymore, I didn't get any cover save from that because hills don't naturally give any cover save, and so it was just one of those like. This isn't true line of sight anymore. It's a more abstract system, and I need to just accept it and move on, and that's just what it is. But there was my knee-jerk reaction of like, well, come on, I should be getting something, but that's just one of those things, because it's a snapshot, a moment in time. That dreadnought's really moving, climbing, coming up, but whatever. I think there's going to be a lot of those kind of situations where you sort of just have to accept that that's the abstractness where the rules need to be in order for, everything else to be the way it is. And hopefully it becomes more second nature and it doesn't feel as jarring. Hopefully it's just a little bit of that edition change and kind of the things that we actually did enjoy from previous editions that maybe we didn't even think of until they were changed, you know. So,
well, I think it also is going to require people to get a heck of a lot more like true large line of sight blocking terrain. There's a massive difference. If you have like a big ruin that's got lots of windows and holes in it, it's almost useless.
Yeah, it really like, is.
Unless you're getting whatever unit you want to have cover fully in that terrain piece, whatever that means, like, you know, it just becomes not, unless you're camping an objective, you're really probably not going to do that.
Right, right. And that game very much is a speed-based game still. It's still a lot of movement.
More movement, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the units move faster than they used to, and if they do move slower, there's some kind of weird mechanic like advancing or something that allows you to still move and do stuff. And, you know, everybody seems to be so quick now, so it doesn't seem like a game where you're going to have too many units kind of camped out like you're saying. So that's kind of
just an adjustment, I guess, maybe, at best an adjustment, but it's just feels a little bit weird the way the terrain works for so far in sort of thinking about it and looking at it. More of a positive note, I really do like the loss of templates and blast markers and all that. I never liked having to be super careful about spacing everything out and making sure, you know, you're minimize your damage when taking a blast. You can really cram guys forward if you want, you know, if you, and it's a little more cinematic. You can squeeze guys onto like the second floor of a building and you know, just things look cooler, things look a little more realistic than just making sure everything's 2-inch maxed out space, because God forbid, you know, a large blast marker land on me. And it also definitely ends the whole like, I see 8 dudes. No, I think you really can only see 7, and that's never. It's a time waster and it's not fun to do.
The multi-level ruin issue where you hit, you know, like that cylinder really of damage where now it's just pick your unit. Allocate your damage. I love it.
It's really nice. So I like that. again, because we're a more abstract game, you see weird, nonsensical things like shooting your flamers at a flyer. It can happen. Like,
one of the best ways to hit a flyer, actually.
Yeah, you're actually going to try to do that. So is that something we're just going to have to get used to? Will there ever be a added complexity where the flamers get a rule, can't attack flyers? I mean, are we going to go back there? Are we going to creep back towards complexity? These are all just speculations. Probably not. I think everyone's happy with this more streamlined game, but
yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the whining and complaining online have been about, and sort of this is the typical, you know, edition to edition or codex to codex thing where, you know, my unit X isn't as good as I want it to be anymore, and now I have to use this other unit, and I have to change my army list, and I've built this army list for this competition, mm-hmm. and now this army list is useless, and it's...
A lot of people took a bath, right? If you just got into Riptide Wing, or you know, like, that's not viable
free
anymore.
Free drop pods, free rhinos.
If you have a million rhinos and drop pods, you can't do that anymore. If you, I guess Eldar not so bad. You got to snap all the scatter lasers off your jet bikes, but that's not terrible. Gene Stealer Cult, like all of your Acolyte and Metamorph spam is not really viable anymore. You don't return to shadows. So a lot of armies took a major bath, and like, you got to do things a lot differently. But I think that's ultimately a good thing.
Yeah, and I don't think in any situation, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think any of the armies, the way they have to function now, if anything, it's closer to the way they function in the stories and fluff and how they quote-unquote should function than previously. Tau were never supposed to be three Riptides and a Storm Surge, but it worked awesome on the table, and it looked really cool, too. You know, now, yeah, you can run that, but that's not going to be your ideal configuration for 8th edition. It's going to be hard for you to win games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think while they did go through a nerf, like, I mean, I'm a big Wraith Knight lover. I have since the model came out. I just like the idea. And now they're, I mean, the Scathash Wraith Knight that I want to run is 740 points right. The way I want to run
it. That would be the Eldar. The Eldar's pain is, you know, the dude it's, with three or four
Wraith
Knights.
He was so undercosted for so long. If he's overcosted for a little while?
You got your money's worth.
Exactly. You know, and eventually, theoretically, the way the game's set up, they should be able to fix it. If he is overcosted, guess what? They should be able to pay attention to that. If he's undercosted, then they should be able to pay attention to that as well. So we do need to be patient as a community as well. I mean, it took them, I think the interview with Crudus said something in the long lines of it took them about 2 years to develop this edition of 40K. So give them some time to adjust. And yeah, you know, maybe 2 years does seem like a long time, but once you start working on a project of overhauling your entire collection, I'm sure that was even a more daunting task once they got in the midst of it than it was, you know, when they first drafted the idea. So give them some time, let them adjust. Like you said, right, kind of in the kickoff of your list, is it's not where maybe even where it was sold to be. It's not where you want it to be, but it's close. It's getting there, and it's moving in that direction. And that's really what we need to glean from this, is that they're setting the stage for a lot of good things. And right now we have to sort of accept everything the way it is, and then let's move together to make it better, you know, giving our feedback and providing our feedback, and hopefully them continuing to listen. So yeah, I don't know. It's just, there's just a lot going on, and a lot of the naysaying online is just, I think, just people kind of a little bit butthurt about collecting. But that's been a fact of 40K and probably every tabletop game ever. When they release a new edition, when they release a new codex, when they revise the rules for certain units, they're going to change. Whether you say it's based on model sales or whether it's based on whatever, it's going to be different. They want to see different things on the tabletop, and kind of got to roll with it.
I've been talking in the months leading up in all of our pre-8th talks. You know, I've been saying, well, how's GW going to make money? How's GW going to make money? I wasn't saying it like in a negative way, like they're a horrible company that's just trying to make money off of this. I was trying to say, like, how in the new, you know, whereas in 7th edition 40K, they stayed in business by dropping a new book, created a new power build. People ran out and bought power build X. They sold models. They, you know, put out the big powerful Magnus model, the big powerful Bobby G model. You know, that's sort of how they moved. That's how they stayed profitable and kept the company viable and exciting and new. I was speculating, how would they do it in 8th? In 8th, it seems they're doing it, well, I mean, we all ran out and bought all of the books, which was a great way to do it. And it was good value, but it was still a bunch of people running out and dropping a bunch of money on books. But it looks like the new sort of way you do it to keep it viable with the 8th is like, I guess on the one hand is the potential for weird lists. Like, have you heard people talking about, like, you know, like three Storm Lords and like seven Storm Raven lists and all these like super spammed out lists? I'm a little concerned that I have been hearing people talk about those as being a direction that the game's going to go in. I would be very concerned if If it was, what do you think about those types of builds and lists and people trying to be competitive with stuff like that?
It tends to remind me a lot of like Magic the Gathering, and 40K seems to, when I start getting into list building, it feels a lot like Magic the Gathering, in that, you know, you're going to have certain wonky, off-the-wall, just sort of all the big monsters you can find in one deck type of list. Like maybe that Stormlord list is going to be, or there's a Celestine list that's out there because she's not unique, so you make a whole army of Celestines. And
yeah, you know, that one's a misprint, clearly. Right. But I'm talking about people that are going to just... One thing they didn't do with 8th edition is they didn't do any kind of like rule of three. They didn't do any kind of anti-spam. Right. So there is that possibility. I know for a little while people were talking about a Tau list that constituted like seven suit commanders, the seven of the, I don't remember which one, but anyway, has some kind of like once per game rule, and the concept was that you, each dude could do the once per game rule each, you know, that I believe that got factor eroded, and that list has since not been talked about anymore. But those kinds of things, there was a, I think it's Chapter Tactics, which is the Frontline Gaming's, like, one of the other guys does it, and it's about, like, being competitive and competitive list building. He was talking about some of these lists that he has been seeing and hearing people talk about, like these crazy, super spammy lists. Like, I think one of them was a bunch of Storm Ravens, but that's kind of concerning.
Yeah, I mean... It's all a matter of who you play with and what you're going to play. You know, I mean, if you're talking the highest level GT play, then, yeah, you're going to see weird, wonky stuff where the math just adds up and this statistically is just a really good army. You know what I mean? And hopefully GW pays attention enough where they can change that on an annual basis, and we don't see an army list like that dominate for years and years. But there's no doubt that given the nature of competitive players and Math Hammer and just the propensity to try and, you know, really over-optimize everything, I think you are going to see some loopholes and things like that. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of it in our – you're going to see hard, tough, optimized lists in our area. I'm not saying you're not going to. I don't think you're going to see crazy stuff like that, at least not on the reg. I mean, that's just not – it's not the way – we play in our group, but would it be out of this world to see someone show up to, you know, to a game with 100 flying monsters creatures or whatever is the equivalent to the next crazy list? Sure, yes.
Well, that's the thing is the internet exists, so these lists, all it takes is one person to be like, I'm going to try that, and shows up, and then that can affect a community. Probably, I don't know if this is, well, definitely more positive than something super cheesy like three Stormlords or seven Storm Ravens. I feel like the 8th edition meta, when I first started building my lists, I was just building in my head and I wasn't seeing what other people were doing and looking at battle reports yet, but I was just like dealing with Guard and dealing with Gene Stealer Cult, which is lots of cheap units. So I was really in the realm of like MSU, just tons of like 50 point, 60 point, 80 point units. And I first sort of didn't like that idea because of the whole drop issue and everything. But I just sort of shied away from that because it seems like 8th is much more about bringing like your big dude. Like with Nids, Swarm Lord's very popular. He seems to do a lot with Imperial Soup. Obviously, Bobby G is that big rock hammer unit that just kind of is like just so good that he gets included. Are you finding that with a lot of the other armies and what people are talking about, that they seem to bring like the big bad dude or the big bad tank or the big bad this to sort of be the big point sink of the army and then supplement around that?
I mean, I've basically been lurking on the Eldar groups, the Facebooks and the forums and stuff. And there seems to be kind of basically two camps forming, and now with the Forge World book that came out, the two camps seem to be even more separated because the Forge World Wraith Knights are even more expensive. But basically the discussion on Wraith Knights and whether or not, you know, even the least expensive one is 502 points.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's just too many points for one model, whether it's worth it, whether it could ever hope to influence the game worth its point value. And basically, the people who are using them seem to like them. And yes, they do go down fast to like Last Cannon spam or something like that, which they should go down quick to that. Or there's the other group that say, you know, for that five or 600 points, I can throw in, you know, a couple of Hemlock Wraithfighters and
stuff,
some other more potent things. So I've kind of been kicking around the same thing as you, is like I've always been a typical MSU player. I always try to kind of optimize the size of my units, whether they're, you know, always min size or whether sometimes there are a few models above it, but I'm always trying to MSU it. I'm always trying to get the most out of my points. And so, you know, that first list I made was a very 7th edition MSU build with warp spiders and jet bikes. And it's interesting to even conversationally talk about, you know, is MSU worth doing online? Because the response I get from most people is that it's not worth doing because everything split fires now. So you don't have to worry about over-dedicating firepower to this target or that target.
Your opponent's not wasting firepower. He's just – but you do have to declare ahead. You do have to declare before you roll dice. So there's that.
And I feel that being MSU kind of like combats it. So Bob, you have your blob of 50 guardsmen, and I have 5 units of 3-man jet bikes. So it's only 15. That's 30 wounds you got to take care of. Now I'm forcing you to divide your firepower, like you said, before ever rolling to hit even one time. I feel like statistically I'm better off doing that than maybe making 3 giant blobs of jet bikes where you have less to split your firepower of. So I'm kind of back and forth on it is what I'm getting at. I think MSU is probably the way I'm going to go, but I don't know if it's the best way to go.
Well, you're in a good position as an Eldar player in that if you're going to be MSU, you have to basically assume you're going to go second every single time you play the game. So you're going to need a plan to go second and survive.
Right.
With Eldar, you're fast, so you can start way, way back and hidden and still get into the game pretty quickly. So I have been finding that I just don't have an answer with Guard and Gene Stealer Cult MSU. Like, there's no answer to – you just have to sit there and get alpha struck, and that's just – I don't know how to
– Yeah, it ends up being like the old onion wrap, and you're just kind of layering and layering. I don't know.
But the thing about layering –
you got to see play out, because there was one Gene Stealer Cult battle report that I watched on YouTube. And the Gene Stealers coming out of reserve and just assault, it was like a second turn assault, and it killed like half of the army that they were playing against. And it was just so vicious to see, and it was eye-opening for me because, like you said, even with my MSU, okay, so I got a couple units of jet bikes. When that unit of Gene Stealers comes out, multi-assaulting is even easier in this edition than ever before. Boom, they surround all of them, crush them all in one combat, where before they maybe had to hopefully get to one and then maybe get to the next. So it's
right, the others would scoot away.
Yeah, so it's I think there's a viciousness that's not only the alpha strike, but as the game progresses on. You were talking about the Trigon earlier, and I think that's the one where it can arrive and then bring units with it, like Gene Stealers and things like that. So
yeah,
you know,
a tunnel
to be able to choose what turn that comes in and when that comes in, I think that's a whole nother tactical level of 8th edition we're just going to have to deal with, because at some point you're either going to claim board space and just sit still and hope for the best, or you're going to try and move about the table, and I think a lot of the missions determine whether or not you're going to do that, and that's going to be extremely telling to tactically how people approach this, because as soon as you start moving up, someone starts dropping Trigons in your backfield with Gene Stealers, and that's even worse than the alpha strike that you were afraid of. So I think it's definitely something tactically we're going to have to see change and evolve.
Well, you got to remember with everything, all those deep strikes and coming out of tunnels, you're still 9 inches away.
That's true.
And there's really no way to mitigate that other than the command point reroll. Like, Gene Stealers, they're 9 inches away, so they need a 9-inch charge on 2 dice with 1 reroll.
Yeah, it's so, by no means guaranteed, that's for sure.
It's not as scary. You know, from the other side, when you're, like, planning it, like, okay, what do I do when I got, like, 3 things that are all 9 inches getting, you know, I can get a 9-inch charge off? Well, that's not great odds, so kind of back to the drawing board. But I'm still messing around with the NIDs. I think they're workable. I think that has a lot to do with how much line of sight blocking terrain you got and stuff. So, I think I'm about out of my list. My list sort of, the end of my list was more about this kind of thing. Like, will we see weird spammy lists? Will we see, well, I think we're seeing the sort of big dude spearheading your army and then being supplemented with other stuff. I think we're seeing more elite builds over MSU builds. How much of that is due to the go first mechanic? And then finally, like, will it creep? You know, they're talking about the next book. There's already releases. We didn't even talk about, like, 40K news and rumors, but there's all the releases of new Primaris dudes and new Death Company dudes. And then there's what look to be some very good value starter boxes that have, like, cardboard terrain and colored models and stuff. So that I'm always excited about. Value. Starter kits, stuff that maybe gets new people into the game is always really good. The opportunity to get cheap models, although I don't really have any interest in Primaris or Death Guard. I mean, Death Guard's kind of cool, but I didn't totally love the direction that they went with the models. But I got enough armies as it is. I really don't need another army. But that was my question. Do you think it'll creep? Do you think we'll, like, in a couple of weeks, we'll get a Space Marine book that'll be, like, the new hotness, and then right after that, we'll get a, you know, a Chaos Marine book that'll be the new hotness? Do you think we'll see creep right away? Do you think it'll take a little while before we start to see the power creep and the quest for the new awesome rule that comes out of the new book or the new model?
Well, I'm going to answer this in pieces. Yes, there's going to be some creep. There always is some creep when you have...
Yeah, games always
creep.
Codex, games
it has to be. Is it going to be like the first codexes of 6th edition creep, where everything's kind of mellow and cool and all right and balanced? Or are we going to get into that, you know, Tau, Eldar craziness that we saw in 7th edition? And Space Marine stuff toward the end. You know, it's... hopefully they've learned some kind of lesson, and even if they haven't, hopefully we can work together as a community, and they can, even if something is broken, it's only going to be broken until they can release the next FAQ, you know, and hopefully we see that fairly often and continue to see that sort of that trimming, that pruning, that keeping the plant nice and healthy and kind of in that love zone where we want it. But yeah, anytime you're going to have release books, splat books come out after a major release like this, especially the first couple, it's going to set a tone for the rest of the edition, and it's going to set a tone for the way things are going to kind of, excuse me, the way things are going to kind of roll out from here. So I think they're going to kind of drip feed us some Primaris for a while. That's what looks like are coming out right now, and you know, we're gonna see where that goes. Primaris is a very incomplete faction at the moment, so it's going to be interesting to see how they flesh them out without making them crazy. We've already seen some of the models, that sort of Land Raider, Land Speeder looking thing, so you know, we know there's some new models and rules on the way, so it's just a matter of seeing how they do it. But yeah, I guess to answer your question, I do expect some power creep. I just hope it's tiny and minimal and not anything that maybe we even notice, where it just becomes sort of the hotness of the month just becomes those are super cool, awesome new models, and not necessarily those are the super cool, under-costed new models, you know. And hopefully we'll keep
come
it
on.
Direction.
Well, I think they'll always be. I think that you're just going to have to appeal to that kind of player. There's just too
Sure.
many of them not to. Just the question is, can it be done a little more
Palatably.
tamely? Yeah, tamely, tactfully, so that we can all enjoy the game.
Right.
That remains to be seen. I think that ends my initial little list. Do you have any thoughts about the game? You've got to play a game. I'm sure you're reading and building and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a couple thoughts. Over the last week or so since the game's been out, I've noticed really handy for me to get the digital copies. So I purchased the Index Xenos 1 and the also the Forge World Xenos EPUBs, which has been wonderful. And I did not buy the digital edition of the rule book because I just downloaded the primer. I have the physical rule book, so when
Yeah,
I
that's a
want to
tough
use
call. Like,
missions, I'll
how
have the
much do you
missions
need the
there, but
advance? Basically, the rule book is, sorry to interrupt.
yeah,
Basically,
go
the rule
ahead.
book is a crap ton of fluff, which you really don't want to carry around.
Right.
The core rules, which you really do want to carry around. And then the advanced rules, which is
It's kind
the
of your mission
descriptions of,
pack.
it's your terrain descriptions. It's all of your, like, wonky ways to play that nobody plays, like Planet Strike and Cities of Death, and it's also all of your extra missions and
Yeah.
things like that.
So I
So
feel like just having on my phone, just having the points for all of my. First of all, I'm just going to call out that I love that the Necrons and the Eldar are in the same books. It's made my
yeah,
life a
you
hell
got
of a lot
lucky.
easier.
I
But.
didn't even buy that book because it wasn't, you know, it was just like
Yeah.
Necrons. I was like, I'll look at Necrons later,
Yeah,
but
exactly.
did you
But
get to look at Necrons at all?
I've
Is
looked at them a bit. They're a little bit. I hate to use this word, but they aren't as inspiring as my Eldar right now. I just feel like they're going to be a very hardy army, but I'm not quite ready to jump into them just yet. I kind of want to see how the game plays a little bit more before I get into them, because I feel like I'm still a little sour on some of the changes they made, and I feel like it's just me being sour to the way that they've changed how Necrons work. Rather than, like, I don't like the new reanimation protocol. You know, they talk about how it's more powerful, and if you have big units, you do get to roll over and over. I tend to run MSU, so that doesn't help me. So I have to get my mind into the bigger blobs of warriors and things like that. So I've sort of just put that on the back burner for now, just sort of been like, I'll get there when I get there. I do love the way Nightsides work. I do love the
How are
way.
wraiths?
Wraiths are really good. They got another wound, which is awesome. And whip coils now are kind of like the old Wolfen rule, where if they die in the fight phase, they still get
Oh,
to
they do
attack
something nice.
before you remove the model. So that's really cool. I think they're going to be really good still. The way that scarabs work, you don't get to add more to a unit, you get to replenish previously died ones to a unit. So that kind of changes how scarab farming works. Just, you know, so a few subtle things. The Catans are pretty awesome now. They can just kind of throw out mortal wounds based on their abilities. And there's three different Catans now. There's what the Deceiver, Nightbringer, and then the Lightning Jesus. I forget what he is. The Transcendent Catan.
Oh, I like that guy. Yeah, that
Yeah,
guy's
and
gonna
so
be great.
he's back. And he's the only one of the three that has 10 or greater wounds. I forget how many. So the other two can kind of hide like giant characters. So that's kind of cool. They're a little more defensible, and they can kind of they make up for that the lack of psychic powers by being able to just kind of deal out a few mortal wounds every turn. So that's kind of neat. So they seem really cool. Dylan's played against them a couple of times. He said they're really you know aggravating and tough to get rid of, which is kind of what the Necrons do.
That's what they should be.
You know, but kind of back to my point, which is. I feel very lightweight right now. It's nice to not have a million books on my phone. I just have the Forge World book, I have the Xenos book, and I have the Battle Primer and Designer Notes, which are two little free PDFs that you get off the GW site. I love that it's free rules. I literally have a printed copy of the free rules on my refrigerator, because both Nicholas and Laura have mentioned interest in at least trying to see if there's any interest in a new edition. And that kind of brings me to my next point, which is. I think 8th edition is one of the most teachable editions of the game now. Is it necessarily going to hook anybody that wouldn't be interested before? I don't know about that, but I do think it's going to be a lot easier for us veteran players to
You could not teach a person, a new person.
7th edition? No way.
7th edition, you could not be like, oh, yeah, here's what you need to do.
No,
like,
it would take months. It would take literally months to teach somebody to play, and I don't think they would still have
quit.
A full grasp.
They would have quit.
Yeah. Now,
so 8th edition has that. It's super.
30 minutes to an hour, I feel like you could teach someone how to play 40K, especially like
you
a
could
very
put,
small
you know, you could
value.
Put like 10 space marines on the table in front of someone and be like, here's how this game works.
Right, and back to the PowerPoint conversation we were having earlier, you know, I could say to Nick, let's put 20 points together. Boom, we play like the equivalent of a 500-point battle in probably 45 minutes to an hour rather than, you know, 3 hours of setting up and then 2 hours of me convincing him that he actually would enjoy it. You know, it's just I feel like it's the most teachable and accessible game of Warhammer 40,000 that they've ever released, and hopefully that brings a lot of players back. There's nothing that really makes me quite happy in the same way as seeing somebody who hasn't played for a long time, has sort of lingered on the outside, or someone who's just sort of lost faith in it, to at least want to come back and check it out and come and read it. Like even Crisati stopped by the other day, and he's probably one of the most down on tabletop gaming people in our group. And even he, by the end, was like, you know, it looks fun. It looks like something I could play with. There's some things in the book that are interesting to make army lists with. And I'm really hoping that even if it doesn't grab him, this is the edition that's going to be most apt to grab him based on just the simplicity of the game, how easy it is to learn. And from that point, it's the difficulty becomes how annoying of units do you want to take? You know, how pick the units with very few special rules, and the game's going to be very easy to play. You know, you might not be able to beat some of the more advanced lists, but you know what? You're going to be able to play Warhammer 40K, you know? So I think that's the number one and number two things that I've noticed is it's so refreshing. Yes, I had to go out and buy two indexes, and I had to buy the rule book, and they kept saying, you know, it's less books. It is less books. I need the free rules that they give me for literally for free, and I need the two $20 EPUB purchases that I got, and I'm off to the races. I can do everything I want. It's right on my phone. It's super lightweight.
Oh yeah, value wise,
you know?
The way they release it, you get value. You get good value. Not saying that anything to the contrary on that.
Yeah, and so
I like that you. I'm taking the similar approach with you, just kind of trying to keep it simple, like not focusing on all my armies all at once, just like, you know, you're just kind of grooving on your Eldar and enjoying trying things out.
Yeah, I'm not even like getting complex. Like the Eldar, very much like the Imperium, have faction keywords that are very open, so I can mix Dark Eldar, Harlequins,
you can do a lot of mixing,
everything all in one, and I still haven't really even explored that even pen to paper yet. I've been so excited on just making Craftworld armies with, hey, I can put fire dragons in and I can run banshees and I can run, you know, just mishmashing of all kinds of units that I just want to try and play out and see how they work. So there's so much laid out before me that's going
to
be so exciting, you know, as far as starting to mix and match that stuff. Like you said, move on to the next army, the Necrons. The Imperial Knights are sitting on the shelf. I'd love to get them going. So there's just so many places to go. It's a very exciting time to be right now. So
very cool. Yeah. I feel like the same thing. I'm just gonna kind of groove on the NID and Gene Stealer Cult builds that I've kind of got worked out, and I can intersperse, you know, add in some guard and mess around with those three and just sort of focus on that. And then if it doesn't work, or if it's underpowered, or if there's, you know, just too much craziness in our meta, then, you know, I got the Gilliman model when
Breakout Dylan, Bobby G.
Yeah, Dylan basically had the crazy power build, and it was like the first time I looked at a power build and I was like, oh, like I already own all of those models. And it's like, oh, so like I never really had that experience. It usually was like I would have to whatever, go out and buy four Riptides or go out and buy, you know, 10 Razorbacks or something just to get the whatever the the competitive build was, but this was the opposite. It was like, oh man, all I need is Bobby G, and that's a beautiful kit, first of all.
Yeah, it's a nice model.
And I needed I don't really have I have a pretty sizable Grey Knights army, but I don't have an actual like Grandmaster. Like I have like a just like an old metal Terminator that I've painted up like one, so it was nice to get a real Grey Knights like big bad HQ.
Yeah, it's a cool model. And this too.
Yeah, it's a really nice model. People make fun of it, but I like it.
Yeah, I like it.
And the Cypher model, I always dug on. I never was a Dark Angels person at all, but I do like Cypher and his little story. But he doesn't exist. Is he like only his rules are in the Chaos book? Is that true?
Honestly, I don't know.
I think his rules are in the Chaos book or something. His rules are not in the Dark Angels book. So
that's interesting.
I heard that he's in the Chaos rules, but I have the model, so I was messing around with the Bobby G builds, and it's ridiculous. I had two Rifleman Dreads and some Devastators and a Storm Raven with Hurricane Bolters and auto assault cannon, all buffed by Bobby G. And
yeah, that's like, basically what Dylan ran the other night.
It was ridiculous.
It's like 1,250 like points right there. Yeah,
I had my my Gene Stealer. Like I have my Nid build is like all Gene Stealer cult or Gene Stealers running at you with Trigon and Termagants, and he was just blowing just crazy amounts of damage coming out of that.
Yeah, it was brutal, but it kind of, to your point, like you said a few minutes ago, it's hard to be really mad when you're getting destroyed by Riflemen, Dreadnoughts, and Storm Ravens, because it's like, whoa, mm-hmm. those things should have been doing that right along. Like, everything's kind of where it should be right now, you know? Like, it's not, like you said, four Riptides and a weird thing and or whatever. These are supposed to be like staples of a Space Marine army. Like, they're supposed to have Dreadnoughts and they're supposed to have Storm Ravens. Like, you put the crucial Bobby G piece in there to kind of, you know, seal the deal. But as far as what tools are actually doing the damage to you, it's hard to be angry that a Storm Raven's finally able to put out like 24 bolter shots in a turn or something like that. Mm-hmm. It's just vicious. It's awesome.
Yeah, it was. So that's my plan, is to just, I have like sort of, things I want to mess around with. And then if it just gets out of control and everyone else is power gaming, then I can at least have Bobby G to try to compete a little bit in the more powerful games.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited to see. Hopefully I'm going to get a game in tomorrow against Adam, and I'm just excited to see like all the different races and how they work, you know, the orcs and the nids and the Imperial Guard. And I just want to get games in against every faction just to kind of explore. That's kind of where my head's at right now. Like yes, I'm focused on trying to get like my quote unquote list together. But I think a big part of that process is going to be just playing against every faction that I can and just trying to experience a wide breadth of 8th edition before I really focus in and assume I know anything.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, man.
Cool.
Well, I think the night's getting a little long, so...
Yeah, I think we're about done. I think we've had a natural conclusion to the talk. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Be sure to check out our Facebook page, Veterans of the Long War. Check out older episodes. You can find us on iTunes. What else, Joe?
Podomatic, and soon I'm going to get a link up to the Google Drive where I have every episode minus, I think, two episodes. There's two missing episodes in the archives. But it's kind of fun to go back and listen to our first couple episodes. So I'll have that posted up eventually, hopefully within the next month or so. But that's one of the goals of mine for this summer, is to kind of restructure the back end of the podcast and hopefully save us a few pennies in the process. So anyway, that's that. So thanks for listening to episode 42. This was Veterans of the Long War. Hop on Facebook, give us some conversation, and we'll talk to you guys next month. All right, guys.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks. You.